Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, June 4th. We talked on Wednesday's show after the commemorations of the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre about the controversy that broke out there last week over reparations for survivors and descendants of survivors of the massacre. So much wealth was destroyed when the so-called Black Wall Street neighborhood in Tulsa was targeted and destroyed that it has affected the prospects of specific people who can be identified as individuals in Tulsa and have never been made whole. Now, beyond centering the history for more public awareness, like was done this week, beyond a ceremony and a lot of media conversation, what does Tulsa, what does America owe those families in actual dollars and cents? We talked about that in terms of Tulsa on Wednesday. Now, we'll take it on nationally. Now, here's part of the problem. Conventional approaches to closing the racial wealth gap have only worked to a limited degree. Here's President Biden acknowledging an example of that in his speech in Tulsa on Monday.
Shockingly, the percentage of Black American homeownership is lower today in America than when the Fair Housing Act was passed more than 50 years ago. Lower today. That's wrong. And we're committed to changing that.
So the president is proposing a new program to help Black Americans buy homes. It's one of several measures he announced in his Tulsa speech intended to close the racial wealth gap. We'll talk about some of the others with our guest Andre Perry from the Brookings Institution in just a minute. But equity in a home, think about it, is just one example of the gaping wealth disparities that simply shouldn't exist anymore, or certainly shouldn't be as big as they are, if the civil rights laws and affirmative action and other measures instituted way back in the 1960s were working well enough, right? By measures I've seen widely cited, the average white family in the U.S. owns 10 times the wealth of the average Black family. Not 10 percentage points more, 10 times. Think about that if you're white. Think about that if you're anyone else. The Biden measures, we should say, are also mostly conventional. The president avoided the word reparations in that Tulsa speech. But there are examples of reparations around the country that are worth talking about. In March, the city of Evanston, Illinois, passed a small one, $25,000, toward mortgages and other home ownership costs for Black residents. Also in March, the Virginia legislature passed and Governor Ralph Northam signed a bill called the Enslaved Ancestors College Access Scholarship and Memorial Program. A lot of words. What it means is it requires five state universities that were built in part by enslaved people to identify those people by name as much as they can be known and memorialize them and spend money on college scholarships or economic development in communities with historic ties to slavery. And get this, the money cannot come from tax dollars or tuition hikes at those colleges. Some other colleges elsewhere in the country are doing things like that too. So are Evanston, Illinois and the Commonwealth of Virginia paving the way for what could be a more comprehensive national approach to something that might be called reparations? And can these approaches bring racial wealth, equity any better than those that have come before? With us now is Andre Perry, scholar and journalist and senior fellow in the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution think tank. He also has a book published last year called Know Your Price, Valuing Black Lives and Property in America's Black Cities. Dr. Perry, we really appreciate you joining us for this today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
There are so many places we could start, but let's start here. You wrote a Washington Post op-ed in April about the Evanston, Illinois program, headline, Evanston's grants to Black homeowners aren't enough, but they are reparations. Why do they count as reparations in your eyes, and why is that important?
Well, first of all, we have to always acknowledge that damage was done. Injury was caused by various entities, including the federal government, state government, local municipalities, and as you said, institutions like churches, universities. And so everyone has a moral debt to pay for their role in either slavery, systemic discrimination in housing, criminal justice. And so it's just simply the right thing to do if you're a municipality and you know that you caused injury or harm to the people living in your community. And so one, there's this, in my opinion, just a moral debt to be paid. Two, though that injury caused significant financial harm, among other things, but we can certainly calculate the financial harm. So if you're in Evanston, and you lived in an area that was redlined, you were denied opportunities to purchase or refinance your home, build wealth, pass that wealth onto your children. And it's having, and it contributes to the 10-to-1 wealth gap between white and black Americans that you had, you spoke of earlier. And so for me, this is something communities should be doing, institutions should be doing. It's never too late to do the right thing.
You quote a pro-reparations critic of the Evanston plan, these $25,000 grants to black homeowners to buy or maintain mortgages. You quote a pro-reparations critic of that plan, Evanston Alderman Cicely Fleming, who called it merely a housing plan dressed up as reparations. What's the distinction she was trying to make, and is it important?
Yeah, there is a distinction that a lot of people really do believe that reparations is an act of Congress that acknowledges or sets forth a comprehensive approach to redress the injuries caused. And so it would be eventually H.R. 40, that is a reparation study, they would come up with a plan. That plan would essentially be enacted by Congress, and then you would see essentially probably trillions of dollars going to a comprehensive reparations plan. The problem with that is nothing really comes from Washington. Things go to Washington. And so for me, reparations is the same. Reparations won't come from Washington. It will go to it. We are starting to see communities, local leaders acknowledge what they've done wrong. And by the way, the federal government wasn't the only entity to cause injury to black people. And even in the housing market, housing is a product that comes from federal, state, and local entities. And all of those things colluded to harm black people. But each has a responsibility to pay back. So it is small, no question. It's not enough, like I acknowledge. But it is reparations. Reparations, plain and simple, is repairing the damage caused by an entity. In this case, it was Evanston. So Evanston has a role to play.
Dr. Perry, what about the proposals to reduce racial wealth disparity that the president announced in Tulsa? There's the one to help black Americans buy and keep homes that I mentioned. And the other main one that I've seen is to increase federal contracts with minority-owned small businesses to 50% of federal contracts that the executive branch controls, up from 10%, which the White House estimates would mean $100 billion in investments over the next 5 years. Reparations or not reparations, meaningful or not meaningful?
Well, I think that Biden has a conceptualization of equity that is defined as fairness under the law. And in many of the actions in the fact sheet that the Biden administration put out this week, were really address fairness under the law, things that government should have been doing in the first place, making sure that procurement or contracting services with Black, Brown, and Asian businesses are going through the federal government, making sure that there's investment in Black businesses. And so I think it's important to remove the dregs of racism from the federal government, and that's what I think this latest attempt is doing. One that I'm very that's a personal issue of mine in the fact sheet, they're going to look at appraisals. So a lot of my research has shown that homes in Black neighborhoods are underpriced by 23%, about $48,000 per home. Cumulatively, there's about $156 billion in lost equity in Black neighborhoods simply because of the concentration of Black people in the area. And so that's $156 billion. And I just want to put this into context. Mm-hmm. $156 billion would have financed more than 4 million Black-owned businesses based on the average amount Black people use to start up their firms. It would have paid for more than 8 million four-year college degrees, public degrees, replaced the pipes in Flint, Michigan 3,000 times over. It would have almost covered all of Hurricane Katrina damage. It's doubled the annual economic burden of the opioid crisis. That's just $156 billion. Can you imagine if some type of reparations package that would cover the racial wealth gap, which it would require around up to anywhere between $5 to $12 trillion based on different estimates. And so a lot could be done. But the point is that I do think removing racism from federal policy, encouraging state and local leaders to do the same will help. But even if you make everything consistent under the law, you won't necessarily close the racial wealth gap, and that requires some form of stimulus.
So before we go to calls, and our lines are full, and Tanya in East New York, I see you on line one, you'll be the first caller. Who would qualify as you imagine it? Because I think the concept of reparations is overwhelming to many people who don't know how to figure out who would qualify, how much is owed, how could they be fairly paid, how much of a difference could they make. So let's just take one of those.
As
descendants of enslaved people in this country who could demonstrate that lineage somehow personally, or also other members of the African diaspora, like immigrant family members from the Caribbean or Africa itself, or only people below a certain wealth threshold today, how could that question of eligibility be handled? Because I think, to be frank, a lot of white people get hung up on this.
Oh, yeah. But there's different claims for different injury. So for slavery, for the enslaved in America, you're talking about the federal government paying for the reparations for the descendants of the enslaved Americans. And so we would not be paying for members of the diaspora who were descendants of the enslaved in Jamaica or the Caribbean or in Africa. It would really be American descendants, and we could achieve that through a number of ways. Actually, we have a lot of records, physical records, but then you have now genetic testing and lots of other things. We can work that. But for things like housing, redlining wasn't that long ago. We actually know who lived in these areas that were redlined. And so municipalities would be responsible, states and municipalities and the federal government would be responsible for those claims. And so it's somewhat confusing, but really not. I mean, throughout history, we've given reparations to groups, including 9/11 victims, for injuries caused by things that were out of their control. We've seen Asian Americans who were interned receive reparations. We've seen Native Americans receive reparations. Of course, internationally, we've seen Jews and other groups receive reparations. There is practice in doing this. This is not coming out of the blue. So what I think people get caught up on, you'll often hear people say, I didn't own slaves. Mm-hmm. Why am I paying? No, you're not paying. The federal government paying, just like There's lots of services I don't use that the federal government pays for because just this past year, what's interesting is that after 2 weeks of being socially distanced, you've had businesses demanding the federal government repair for asking them to shut down their business. Now, imagine what it's like to be socially distanced for generations. What kind of repair would you need? And so this idea that people get hung up on reparations, I just don't buy it. I think that people believe in reparations. Most Americans believe in reparations. They just don't believe in reparations for Black people. And then the questions come, because when it comes to Americans in COVID or 9/11 victims or other instances, we say, hey, that's the right thing to have some form of reparations. But when it comes to Black people, people then say, oh, I didn't own any slaves. I didn't do it. And it just doesn't hold up.
Well, the distinction I think white people need to look at, I'll speak personally, I didn't own any slaves. My ancestors didn't own any slaves. My four grandparents all were immigrants in the 20th century. So they certainly didn't own any slaves. But does that mean that I didn't benefit from systemic racism? It doesn't mean that.
That's exactly right. So there's like burdens and benefits that comes from systemic racism. And many white Americans, and regardless of your lineage, benefited from systemic racism. And as evidenced by the 10-to-1 wealth gap. It's also evidence in home ownership rates. And even you see the effects of all of this in death rates because of COVID, that systemic racism provided a layer of protection that Black Americans on average do not have or did not get in the same way.
Tanya in East New York, you're on WNYC with Dr. Andre Perry from the Brookings Institution. Hi, Tanya. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, and thank you for having me. Listen, Dr. Perry, my thing is with the systematic racism, do they really want to give us reparations? Everybody knows about Black Wall Street. We know how you take things out, how systematic racism take things out of the Black American communities and things like that. My thing is that we do not want to intrude on anything with white people have. We want our own fairness. We wouldn't go in your neighborhoods if y'all kept the resources in our neighborhoods like y'all have in yours. We wouldn't need to go to your school if it was fair. All we want is for to be treated like equal people who helped build this country, just like the white Americans who took the country from the Native Americans. All we want is reparations. It's not hard. Black people, if you know we Black when we going for these loans, why is it hard for reparations? We Black when it counts to get red line for houses. I get a higher interest rates and all this stuff like that, and then my house is devalued because systematic racism says this area is not good. East New York is not good now because people say it's not good, but as soon as other cultures come in the neighborhood, then it's going to get the resources and get developed, and then it'll be a good neighborhood, right? My thing is that we want our neighborhoods to be good when we're in there, because we won't come to yours. If you leave us with what we're supposed to have, we will not bother you or come to other other areas. And that's we want. Reparations, Scott. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say what's interesting. I do a lot of research on housing, and it's fascinating to see home values increase when white people move in the community, and which robs. So when white people aren't there, you're not seeing the kind of infrastructure. You're not seeing the kind of funding in the schools. You're not seeing everything from the street lights being fixed to the potholes being filled. And we don't need white saviors. We just need what was always owed. And like I said, this is not about a handout. This is about the federal government, state government, local governments denying Black people opportunities. And this is another important piece. When you deny Black people opportunities, you essentially throttle the economy. The more jobs, the more housing, the more assets black people own, the proverbial pie grows. Everything expands. And so for me, this is an instance of cutting your nose to spite your face. When you deny mm-hmm. black people resources, you deny the economy resources.
Tanya, thank you very, very much. Dr. Perry, in your book, Know Your Price, Valuing Black Lives and Property in America's Black Cities, do you try to quantify the total amount of wealth stolen in today's dollars or from today's descendants? And I think some people get stuck on an idea that to pay back the whole debt would bankrupt the treasury. So then they get overwhelmed and they just don't go anywhere.
Well, it's clear that we won't bankrupt the treasury. We just, doled out $6 trillion over the last year, and the fears of everything from inflation to bankruptcy never came to pass. We can do this over several years. So it's when people quantify, they do it in different ways, and they usually look at the total amount of the wealth gap and what it would take to close that gap. And in general, there are different models, but they run anywhere from $5 trillion to $20 trillion in general. But there are different claims for different injuries. And so when it comes to slavery, you're talking about the American descendants of the enslaved. When you're talking about housing discrimination, you're talking about the people in redlined areas. And those are different claims. And so sometimes there's consternation, but more people recognize that there are different claims requiring different forms of payment. And so if you're talking about slavery, yes, you're talking about cash payments to the descendants. If you're talking about housing discrimination, you are talking about low interest financing and housing grants and certainly business loans and things like that. So for me, it's not really that controversial. The issue is, how do you pay this? What period of time do you do this, in what forms? But that's something lots of us are working on constantly, and there are numerous models around this. And so I would just say, check out some of the writings on reparations, certainly Sandy Darity, myself, and others throughout the country are working on this. But there are many ways, many different models that we could take, but we should not stop because there's debate about, should it be Caribs, or should it be Native American different groups of black people? Yes, there should be different programs for different people.
And we leave it there, unresolved, but the conversation continues. It will certainly continue here. Andre Perry, senior fellow in the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution. He also has a book called Know Your Price, Valuing Black Lives and Property in America's Black Cities, published last year. Thank you for having this conversation with us, Dr. Perry. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.